I chose a broad title for the sermon today. I wanted to be able to explore the question from several different perspectives. From the widest angle possible, the question asks, why are you here? Meaning, why are any of us here? What is the meaning of life? Or it can mean, why are you here? As in, what is the purpose of your particular life? Or it can mean, in the most immediate sense, why are you here? Why are you sitting in this service right now? All of these are good and juicy questions, and they directly relate to one another. The first question is really the ancient and ultimate question: what is the meaning of life? Innumerable religions and philosophies have emerged and evolved, each one in some form of attempt to create a system of answers. I'm not going to try to summarize them for you. When trying to consider the meaning of life itself from this very wide angle, it helps to back up pretty far, get a universe eye perspective. There's a video on YouTube entitled Cosmic Eye that begins with a view looking down at a woman as she lies on her back on some grass. The video then pans out, getting higher and higher in the air, and soon you can see the larger context of the lawn nestled among some buildings in a business park. And then as it goes up, you can see the business park is in Mountain View. And then as the towns and cities grow smaller, you begin to see the California coastline, and then the entire continent of North America fills the screen. As the camera rises steadily higher and higher in perspective, the entire Earth soon comes into view. And then it grows smaller and smaller, and suddenly we see the moon in its orbit around our planet. Then the entirety of our solar system begins to shrink, and we can see the outermost dwarf planets. Soon the neighboring stars become visible, and then they are subsumed within countless others into the spiral arms of the Milky Way. The viewpoint continues to move farther and farther outward until the other galaxies in our galaxy neighborhood come into view and then shrink into the larger local supercluster. And then we can see how the supercluster is really a smaller part of the much larger cosmic web, which in turn makes up just a tiny percentage of the uniform universe. The screen then holds that image of the whole universe for a moment, and a multidimensional web of light suspended in darkness. Gazing at the entire universe, it's hard to keep in mind that deep in the center of that unbelievable light web is that woman lying outstretched on her back on the lawn of a business park in Silicon Valley. As far as we know, our little blue planet is the only one sustaining life. We know Earth is suspended in the unfathomable, infinite darkness of what we call, for lack of a better term, space. And so hangs the question that has plagued the stargazers from the very beginning. Why, for what reason, are we here? What purpose does our awareness, our self-awareness, serve? What is our significance? I have a bumper sticker on my car. It's a quote from Thich Nhat Hanh, the Vietnamese Buddhist luminary, that says, "We are here to awaken from the illusion of our separateness." Now, there's no way to know if that's empirically true. There's no way to check the answers in the back of the book. But I did Google meaning of life just to see what came up. The definition of the word life was among the first answers. Life, noun, the condition that distinguishes animals and plants from inorganic matter, including the capacity for growth, reproduction, functional activity, and continual change preceding death. This capacity for growth and continual change preceding death I found most interesting. Built into the definition of life is growth and continual change. I enjoy believing that consciousness itself is evolving, becoming more complex. Some have said that we are God becoming aware of God's self. Our awareness of being alive and our existential knowledge that we will die distinguishes us from all other life forms. What we each choose to do with that information informs the choices that we make in our lives. Which leads us to the next aspect of the question. Why are you here? What is your calling? What is the creative life force energy of the universe beckoning you to do? I think of this subtle force pulling at us the way a magnet pulls at iron filings. It is possible to ignore it, but some find that the force of life's summoning begins to wear down their resistance, and it just becomes easier to surrender. It makes sense to me that the more we can align ourselves with that influence, the pull of our true purpose, the more likely we are to be aligned with joy. The realization of just how short and precious our life is often causes us to reconsider our life's trajectory and make some course corrections. Many people make significant changes in midlife in the attempt to realign their lives. The cliche of the midlife crisis is real, I can attest. It's a rude awakening to realize that you have crested the hill and are now on the way down the other side. Or sometimes it's battling a disease or the death of a loved one that does it. I was 26 when my father died. And not long after that, I decided to stop thrashing around and resisting and just go to seminary. I wonder what has happened in your life that has helped you to decide to make some major change. Or maybe you are in the midst of some adjustment right now. There is a lot of energy in these times we're living in, of this great upheaval. Remember that despite the unpleasantness of the turbulence, these are also times of tremendous opportunity. Keep breathing and have faith in yourself and one another. I had a friend who said that the way she came to making decisions about how to spend her time and her attention was to hold the possibility in mind and see whether or not it lit her up. If so, she would do it. She was retired, by the way. If not, it was easy for her to say no. Sometimes what lit her up also carried with it some fear. But she would say, "That's okay, I'll just do it scared." We can ignore or resist what we are called to, but that takes more energy. Choosing to do what lights us up, we are participating in the flow of life energy. We are going with the current rather than obstructing the stream. And so we can become a conduit instead of an impediment. People who have become good, clear channels for life's energy are more vibrant and more luminescent and more able to facilitate the process for other people. Find those people. Surround yourself with them if you can. Which brings me to the last aspect of the question. Why are you here? What brings you to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of San Diego this morning? Whether you have come here out of habit or conviction, loneliness or curiosity, some part of you suspects that your participation in this congregation might help you discern both your own life's purpose and the purpose of life itself. And why are you in the particular constellation of your life's situation at this very moment? What series of twists and turns has brought you to be where you find yourself? We are where we are because of the millions of choices that we have made up until this moment. If we are interested in more actively participating in the evolution of consciousness, it is worthwhile to consider how it is that we make the choices that we do. Our minds are powerful instruments we are just beginning to understand. There's evidence that there is little difference in our brains between an actual event and the visualizing of an event. Professional athletes always spend time envisioning making the goal, hitting the ball out of the park, or clearing the bar. In any physical activity, dance or martial arts or sports, the coaches and teachers tell us that where our sight goes, there our body will follow. It's useful to ask yourself, where have you set your sights? What is your vision for yourself? As you make every choice in your life, no matter how seemingly insignificant, are you holding in mind your highest intention? And what are you using as a guide? What we choose to attend to defines our experience. So if you can control your attention, you can control your experience. If you are on the lookout for the ways that people are out to get you, if you watch out for every slight or disrespect, you will find it. You'll catch them all. But if you are alert to all the ways that your life is supported, if you are attentive to beauty and kindness and hopeful action, your awareness will be filled with those experiences. These choices in each moment are within your control. I know that many of you are experiencing anxiety, especially in these times. I find it helpful to remember that those of us who are alive today are the genetic descendants of all of the preceding humans who were especially alert to danger. We have evolved from the very most anxious people. The very relaxed, laid-back humans were the ones who got eaten and taken out of the gene pool. But learning to control your attention and bringing your mind back from the brink of all that could possibly go wrong, I know I do that, it's a critical skill to have in your toolbox, especially now. And meditation is the study and practice of our mind and attention. It is the gym where we strengthen our attention muscles. And it is the only way that I have been able to keep myself grounded and relatively peaceful amidst all of the stress and turmoil. As you may know, there are a number of open meditation groups that meet here on campus every single week. And I know that the facilitators and I would be very happy to talk to you if you're interested in honing your awareness skills. Mystery, mystery. Life is a riddle and a mystery. No matter what it is that you think about where we came from or where it is that we are going, or the ultimate purpose or meaning in life, or if there even is an ultimate purpose and meaning in life, you are here now. And you are here now. And it is within your ability to align yourself with your own highest spirit, with your life's calling. You can make the choice to use your gifts to bless the world. May it be so, and amen.